Hi, and welcome to Youth Unfiltered, a podcast from Connect Evergreen. Connect Evergreen is a coalition in the Vancouver, Washington area made up of students, parents, and community members working together to support youth and build connections in the community. I'm Shreya Gupta, and along with my fellow interns from Union, Heritage, and Mountain View High School, we'll be sharing conversations about the issues, challenges, and ideas shaping student life today. Everything from substance use to social stigmas. Whether you're local or just curious about what youth are thinking and doing here, thanks for listening. We're glad you're listening.
Okay, so we were beginning our discussion today around substance abuse campaigns that you felt were effective. The first one being Friends for Life.
That's the animal shelter one, right?
Oh, yeah.
Where they had animals and they're being like, kids are in bad homes or trying to get better, and they bring animals and it teaches them how to foster relationships, teaches them how to be soft, gentle, time and place. It's kind of just a place for belonging too. There's no judgment. When I was in LA, we had that for because there's different levels of juvie. So it's like base juvie, then there's echo juvie, and then there's like super high up where there's like mortars and stuff. Okay. They did that with some of the juvie kids in my area where I lived, and it worked pretty good.
You also mentioned Locks Saves Lives.
That one's like my personal favorite one from ones that I've seen, because it focuses on just like locking away prescription medicine in homes and creating like a safer home environment. So like there's a person who's on certain drugs from prescription, they other kids in the house can't break into that stuff and misuse it. So I like that one a lot.
I see it apply to guns too. I've seen it apply to guns too, where they have like Lock Save Lives for guns, and then opioid use is like the main one that I see.
What do those campaigns look like?
I see ads. Yeah, ads. I see a lot of ads. Like stuff where like adults are watching, because not a lot of people are still watching cable. Not a lot of teens, I feel like, but.
Well, we were doing like a little research project, and I was assigned to research past campaigns, and that was one of the few that I researched.
Weed Can Wait was a local campaign that was put on by the Prevent Coalition, which actually partners with the Connect Evergreen Coalition as well. And I liked their, well, their campaign was pretty successful because it targeted high-risk youth specifically. And their message overall was that the use of marijuana could wait or it could be delayed. And it turned out that this is pretty effective among youth in our area. And they also incorporated toolkits for parents, like with age-specific like ways that they can talk to their youth about substance use, which I thought was very effective.
The
Iceland?
What country was it?
Iceland.
Iceland.
The Iceland approach, they also had a big substance thing, and they just applied curfews, more knowledge for parents, and having parents trying to build better relationships with their kids, and then having different ways of coping mechanisms rather than smoking, going out and playing soccer, something like that.
The one of the main components, I'm sure there was like therapy and counselors involved, but one of the main components was that they tried to find more ways for kids to find connection or do like engage in pro-social activities. So they funded teams, dance teams, sports teams, school clubs, just any way for kids to get out of the house and interact with other peers their age, so that they are less prone to using substances.
And I think it was like extremely significant results, right?
Mm-hmm. It's very effective.
Okay, so what are some examples of ineffective campaigns?
You guys want to start with DARE?
Yeah.
Okay.
Scare tactics just don't really work. And it was a thing, I think, in like the 90s. Where they'd bring in the drugs and be like, don't do this, or you're going to end up like this, and try and scare the kids. And kids didn't really care. They kind of just kept smoking. Think about high schoolers. Most of them already started smoking. So then being like, oh, if you're smoking, this is what happens. And they over-exaggerate it. And we already know that, oh, that's not what happens. That's not what happens. Like, I know what happens.
It was like there was good intentions. It was founded to try to prevent drug misuse. But apparently it was actually removed from schools because it increased the likelihood of drug use among students, because they were exposed to it and they like learned how to use it. And it was they were given information that they otherwise would have been ignorant to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it was kind of counterproductive.
I've seen some where like taught them how to use it and taught them why they shouldn't, and then they like gave examples of what it looks like to use, and then they told them where you could find it and why you shouldn't go there. I've seen one, dude. I saw one like story about it where they brought in weed and they like passed around the blunt to see what it looks like.
Oh gosh!
And the police officer said they passed around like, I think it was two blunts.
And they
said if I'm missing one, everyone's getting pat down and searched, and it came back with three.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I think the Just Say No was a little bit better than the Dare, though, just because Dare was like, it was just like cops yelling and then they'd like show you how to find stuff. At least Just Say No was saying like, just don't fall into peer pressure and don't do it. But it still was super ineffective.
It kind of received criticism because it also placed shame on people who use substances rather than coming from a place of empathy. And it also was kind of judged for oversimplifying the complicated issue of drug abuse. Because there's Just Say No. It kind of, what's it called? Invalidated the issue, maybe, in a way?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, if someone who's, you know, addicted to fentanyl or addicted to opioids and they probably want to quit, I feel like they probably would, if they could, they would. But,
right.
You know, it's not that simple as just saying no. Like, I've seen some withdrawals where they literally can't eat, can't sleep, can't drink water because of how bad the withdrawals are. It's usually people who are trying to help, but they just don't understand it. So they're trying to be like, well, just don't do it. Like, it's this, that, and the other. But they don't understand, like.
And you said the adult and parental perspective isn't always helpful. Why?
Because they see celebrities all the time doing it. And they see everybody else around them doing it. So being like, you're going to end up like this person. But you see all these famous people and all these other people. Like, and then also, if I'm hearing, oh, well, you're going to end up like this and end up like this. Most who are like, that's bullshit, like, I don't really care. Or, like, they're not going to listen to their parents because some are rebelling, some are doing it to cope, some are this and the other. And if you're just like, well, you're going to end up like this person that you don't like.
It's not like they don't know that, right? I feel like they use substances with that in mind, so it's nothing new.
And then also being like, well, I'm not going to do it as bad as them. Or, I'm not going to end up like that. I'm gonna watch myself, or I do it differently. And then some people, they say that, and then down the line they get, oh well, that doesn't look too bad. I've already done this. I've already smoked weed before. Shrooms doesn't sound too bad. And then you get into more and more and more stuff. I mean, there is some people where they're like, well, I'm not gonna end up like that, and they don't because they regulate it. But some people shouldn't be doing it at all. In my communities, where I used to live, everybody was smoking. The older kids, like, you walk home from middle school, this high school, you walk home and they're all out, literally outside the high school just smoking. And, like, you just look up to them because they're older kids. You want to, you know, fit in.
Right. And then there's the we're Hispanic, we're cool by default type billboard that you guys were telling me about.
It's exotifying them, making them be like, you're Hispanic? Oh, my goodness, that's so cool. What type of Hispanic are you? Oh my goodness. Or like in the office, we had somebody say, what type of flavor are you? So then it creates separation still. Yeah.
That campaign is, yeah, simplistic at best and offensive at worst. It's you can see the intention with them. They were trying to be like cool and hip and relatable and target messages towards Latino youth. But it doesn't quite come off the right way.
You could tell there was not a single Hispanic on that board. You could tell there was not a single person who was Hispanic who made that message.
As far as creating the campaign.
Yeah. They didn't mean to do anything wrong, but still, if you're going to be promoting a message to somebody, why would you promote a message that you don't understand or isn't going to help them?
Especially if it's intended to be culturally specific.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they're just trying to be catchy and cool and trying to be appealing to teenagers. And if they just left it as, like, oh, we don't need drugs, we're cool by default, like, I feel like that would have been a bit better. I don't find the need to specify Hispanics.
Right.
Especially when the picture doesn't show.
That's where I was gonna go next. Like that, you're right. If you just would have taken out "we're Hispanics" and still used the same picture,
it would have worked. Yeah. They're very ethnically ambiguous, which is fine, but it
I don't even think they were all Hispanic. It looks like they just sorted like a stock image of teenagers and then called them all Hispanic.
Yeah.
I'm sure AI could do better.
I've seen AI do better.
Oh my gosh. It would take one prompt and you'd have a better billboard.
Oh my gosh. So where did you guys first come across that billboard? Was something online? Or?
There was somebody here who showed it to us.
Yeah,
they one were of the people representing bad campaigns. And then, yeah.
That was one of the examples we were shown.
Mm-hmm. What was your initial reaction when you first saw it?
Shock.
It was just us five.
Yeah, y'all kind of laughed about it.
Yeah,
did you think it was fake at first?
Do
you think it was like a joke?
It almost seemed like satire, right? At least to me, right. I was like, oh, geez.
And we're like, is this real?
I feel like the messaging itself is also kind of problematic, aside from the cultural aspect of it or being offensive. But so they're saying, like, we're cool by default. That means that implies that you don't need to do drugs to be cool. But that also kind of, in a way, implies that drugs are cool. And I don't know. That was something I thought about, too.
Okay.
The logic was kind of weird.
Right. It was like, we don't need drugs to have fun.
People use drugs to have fun.
Right.
Which is, maybe it's true, but you don't want to really promote that, I guess.
Right. I feel like you should leave that part out. Mm-hmm.
It's funny.
So that was kind of an issue, too.
Yeah.
What makes a campaign effective?
Building connection. I think that's like the big thing that we're focusing on here is building connection throughout people. Where that's like the best way for them not to do stuff is having different outlets, different people they can go to, having different resources. It could be anything from, for me, it's playing a sport.
Okay.
For some people, it's might just be reading a book and talking about it or listening to a podcast that they can relate to. For some people, it could be even just talking to a random person at the bus stop every now and then and having a good conversation.
No, I agree. I feel like it's just like any sort of extracurricular activity, even just being at school, like having that one classmate you can talk to, anything can help.
So like if you're a community and you're like, oh, I want to make my community better. And then you do one campaign here, like, oh my goodness, that got so much better. And then it starts to die down, get worse. And then you do it again, just randomly, like after 3 years, and then it gets worse and worse and worse. It's almost like, it's like anything. It's like a sport. It's like skincare. It's like anything. You have to stay consistent with it. Because it's like, think, if you're washing your hair, you only wash your hair here and there. Your hair is going to get greasy and dirty. And then when you wash it again, it's going to look good. But then you need to stay consistent with it, or else it's going to get dirty and dirty and dirty.
I think another good thing is to know your audience, know who you're speaking to, and then be strategic about how you communicate your campaign. So if you're using social media, for example, if you're trying to get a message out to parents, you would probably use something like Facebook. Or if you're trying to get something out to kids, you would use like Instagram or Snapchat or something like that. Somewhere that you know your target audience will see it.
What are some suggestions that you would have towards developing the right messaging?
I mean, for what we're doing for our social media campaign is that we're having like, I think we have like 3 or 4 categories of the type of messages we want to post. So one category is like general, vague messages that apply to almost everyone. And then there's messages for people who aren't using, but we want to still keep that awareness up. And then there's messages for people who are already using. And then there's one more category. Parents.
Okay.
Education for parents. So I think having different categories is helpful.
And then also listening to your community. And then also listening to your community. If you're just putting out stuff, and it isn't relatable, and you keep putting that stuff out, it's going to be like that message where it's not helping, it's not doing anything. But if you have like a conversation, if someone's having an issue, and instead of letting them talk about their issue, you're like, well, you should do this. Oh, you should try and go here. You should try and do this. And they might just want to be heard and be like, well, I feel like I actually need this and this is how I feel. You need to have like, I'm going to talk, then you're going to talk. I'm going to hear you. You're going to hear me. and then we're going to find a way to build this up and make it stronger. You could honestly just ask them, like, what do you guys feel like you guys need? You could ask them like that. You could ask us, put a survey out that's anonymous. If it's like you're at an Alcoholic Anonymous meeting or you're at a Substance Abuse Anonymous and everybody there is like there for the same reason, like we're talking about, like we're trying to prevent this. We're all trying to get off drugs. We're all having issues with it. And if we're all here and we want to help each other and help our problem and we put out a survey and like, please fill out the survey. I feel like it's more likely rather than being like a school putting out a survey that's mass and to everybody and people don't trust the school and being like, oh, well, I trust a kid to say, oh, I do drugs in a school survey, even if they think it's anonymous. It doesn't work like that.
I feel like I would trust a paper survey more than, because like, if you think about it, like online, there's that fear that, oh, they're somehow going to get back to me. Like there's IP addresses. There's always a way to get back to you. But on paper, if it's just like another bubble sheet, how are they going to know it's you, right? There's no handwriting identification. Like you fill out a little bubble sheet, like maybe from the 1 to 10 scale kind of things. What's it called? A Likert scale? So one of those kind of surveys. I feel like that could be helpful. Way more.
And how would you put together a campaign that's far less about punishment?
What we're doing here for mine specifically kind of relates to that. I'm a big fan of DBT skills. Those are kind of skills that help you emotionally regulate, help you find ways to cope, help you find ways to do a day-to-day life if you don't know how to. Because most people who are dealing with substances or have issues with self-harm, mental abuse, or mental issues and stuff like that, it's two sides of the same coin. They either overfeel their emotions or they bottle them up. And then once they overfeel those emotions, then they start to bottle up again. And then these people who bottle up too much, they end up exploding and overfeel those emotions. So these DBT skills usually teach them different ways of, rather than harming yourself or rather than smoking, rather than drinking, like TIPP, T-I-P-P, like there's temperature, physical activity, stuff that you can do. And it teaches them like, well, rather than doing this, you can go out and talk to somebody. You could read a book. You can journal. There's all these other types of things that you can do. It varies for each person, but mine were TIPP. I need physical activity. I need to go do something to get my mind off of something. If I have an issue, the first thing I do, I just go outside. I'll just dribble. If I don't have a hoop, I'll just go around. I'll go to the gym and work out. But for some people, I've seen, like, stop, give. Give is just listening to somebody and validating and being validated, sitting there nodding my head and be like, yeah, I could see how that might be an issue. I want to be validating you. I want to be saying, yeah, I'm sorry that happened. Like stuff like that. Having people, I've seen journaling. I've seen a really big thing for people. Like I journal every day. It's not always about mental health. It might just be about your sport. It might just be how your day went. Man, I did this, and this. Just gives them a place to talk. Then you have like calming down techniques that are still DBT skills. So like, okay, I just did this. Let me think about what I just did. Let me think about what just happened. Okay, now after I just thought about it, let me think of how I could do that better or how I could approach this. And then, okay, if I'm having an issue with someone who I can't change what they're doing. I can't change their actions. It's going to keep on happening. How can I get myself away from the situation next time or make it different? If I do have someone that I can, how can I approach this person and be like, man, like I've seen Dear Man. I don't remember what the acronym stands for, but that's like a really big one that I've seen. Like mental institutes they're always teaching Dear Man.
Oh, yeah. I think having a hobby or just any sort of activity you can do is a good way to get yourself out of the heat of the moment and calm down so that you can look back on the situation and reflect with a calm mind and look at things more logically. Similarly to what Dom said about the DBT skills, just having that sort of empathy for people. So recognizing the risk factors that can lead people to turning to substance use. So for example, having troubles with your home life, past trauma or other situations, and recognizing that those are most likely causes for why they're turning to substance use. And then also shifting focus to recovery and support. Supporting the person, not enabling their behavior, not supporting the behavior, but supporting the person instead. And just having empathy overall.
There was that one campaign thing or some like project where they just opened up like a drop-off site for any of the substances that kids had, so that just drop it off, no consequences or anything, no adult would bat an eye, drop it off and you're safe to go. Right.
Don brought it up before. I think it was just like, it's like a box in a school or in other some sort of like public facility,
yeah,
that people can just go in and drop their things off in and walk away.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I saw one of my favorite YouTubers. His name's De'Adrian Harding. He preaches stay sober. So he's got like, he does like stuff where he'll go into Walmart to mess around and then he'll come out. And he's just like, it's more like comedy, like entertainment, TV. And he preaches stay sober. He'll have like hoodies where it just says stay sober, and he relates a lot to the youth. So what I saw is he went to his hometown and went to his own high school, and there was a lot of vaping, a lot of carts, a lot of drugs that were going around. And if they wanted him to come out, they had to fill up all these things and get all of it down, and they had to get to a certain level. They had a what's it called, like a point that they wanted to hit of being so low that we can get him out here. And then even at like, what's it called when you have a meeting at your school and you go like the gymnasium, an assembly where he was at, and he was like, does anyone want to like bring up their vape and just throw it away and get it away while I'm here? No judgment, no issues, throw it away. And there's like three kids that got up because they related to him. They've never met him before, but they watch his YouTube videos, and like three kids just came up and threw it away. Like, they had, like, three bags just filled with vapes.
I think doing it in front of other people might be a little nerve-wracking for some kids, but, like, maybe a little drop-off site in school would be good. Yeah. And then, like, how you mentioned with the YouTuber, having them coming in, and that'd be, like, as a reward. That'd be kind of good, too.
Why do you think schools don't have drop-off boxes?
Maybe there's, like, a fear that, I don't know, they drop it off, but then if it's open, someone else will pick it up.
But I feel like you can still combat that. I can see that,
but like...
Even just having some sort of thing with like a flaps, like that trash can right there.
Yeah.
With the flaps, that so yeah. You can't go back and reach stuff. And, I don't know.
Yeah.
There's ways around
that's
it.
That's what I was thinking is...
The ballot boxes are like that.
Yeah, exactly.
You can only push it in, you cannot access
it. Oh, you're right. Like yeah. Yeah.
That would be it. You have to open it from the back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So having it like in a wall right next to the office where there's no windows... You just come in, push it, drop it in, and keep on walking by.
I like that. If it's in a wall, you'd have no access to where it's to where the chute goes.
And then the only people that could get it is the people on the other side of the wall in the office.
Do you think it would be it'd be better to have it by the office or somewhere else?
Maybe somewhere else.
Like a bathroom.
From admin.
Somewhere where they can nonchalantly drop it off.
Yeah,
bathroom would be kind of cool, actually.
I think the bathroom, because that's where no cameras, there's no one, they have no chance of getting caught. But then if you do that, then when you're smoking, you get caught, and you get caught smoking in the bathroom, I can see. Yeah.
Drop it off on
your head.
You're still getting rid of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you get caught smoking in the bathroom, that's your little dump off spot. Yeah. So you're still eliminating it at school.
Mm-hmm. Right. But what's stopping them from getting more?
I don't know if anything is.
But then they're going to be spending more money.
Spending more money. It's more doing. Trouble. True. It's less convenient.
Yeah. Hey. Man, now this is a really good idea.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
I mentioned
dual credit. Both of you guys came up with that.
Okay.
I think that's a really good idea because a lot of people go in there anyways, and then if they see that there,
right.
It gives the idea in their head at least.
Yeah.
People already do it in our, at least at my school. People already just throw it in the bathrooms. Like they just
right,
they just leave it in there. They throw it in the garbage can. Or like one time there was like these like paper edible bags, and they ate the edibles, and then they like read the paper bag and just stuck it on the ceiling.
That's it for this episode of Youth Unfiltered. Thanks for listening. We are the Connect Evergreen interns working with this coalition in Vancouver, Washington to bring you these conversations. Make sure to follow along with the future episodes, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.